about it. Because I think the best help that I can give you is the conversations in the questions. That's what a workshop is. So if we can do that rather than me talking all the time, then we've done well. So that's the goal of this particular session. I can entertain you in a 2-day seminar on how to plant churches. So that's not the purpose of this time. All I can tell you is a couple of pitfalls and problems with church planting, and then we can, pitfalls is mistakes, things that don't work, or at least what I think don't work. So let me first say this. I love any church planting, which any way you want to do it, I'm okay with. Traditional way, but I have discovered that a lot of the ways that the church thinks about church planting is a little bit like dragging a very heavy weight. It makes it very difficult. And the other thing is, a lot of the young men and women that we expect to plant churches find that very difficult. And so they mostly fail, many fail. The statistics of failure of church planting is only 1 in 10 succeeds. That's a tragedy, I think. And so I want to change that around. First of all, I want to remove failure completely. None of the people, men and women, that I've planted churches with over the last 8 years have failed. None of them. Not one. The only thing is you've got to change strategy. And so you've got to remove failure from the possibility, from the equation. And I think we can do that here this afternoon. And that means a lot more people can have a go. If they can't fail, what's the problem? If you can't fail doing it, then there's no problem. So let me lay a little bit of a foundation for you. There is what I call traditional church planting. And I'm going to use my board. Why don't you grab a black one out of there for me? 75% of the people that join the church are believers. In other words, they've had some experience with Christ. If you are, now I'm talking about traditional church planting. The people that arrive with you have some context of Christianity, some experience of having known God in their life, and they come and join your adventure. So 75% of them, 20% are what you would call former churchgoers. Okay, I apologize for my writing. So former church people that maybe in their youth used to walk with God, and then suddenly there's a new church plant in the community and they find their way into the local church. Now you add the 20 to the 75, and you've already got a very high number of people, and potentially 5% of the people that join are what you would call unchurched. Now, right there, I have a problem. I don't know whether you have one. I've got one. And I'm talking about university. I'm talking Germany. I'm talking Denmark, church planting. 75% of everyone you attract into a church plant have some form of understanding of Christ and the gospel and church already. 20% have a long lost understanding of that, and only 5% get raw new recruits. Okay? Now, I want to try and change that around for you, and show you what I've been doing in the last 8.5 years. In the last 8.5 years, 75% of everyone that's come into the churches that we've seen planted in the last 8.5 years are unchurched.
Wow. That's not true. You're choking.
I'm not. 75% are unchurched. 20%, so that's exactly the same number, are people that are former churched, and 5% are Christians. Now, if I read Matthew 28:18, go into all the world, make disciples of all nations, I like this a lot better than I like the first statistics. So what, this is a question that should be right at the forefront of your mind. What's the difference? What are you doing different to this? What's the difference between the two? That should be your number one question. Well, I'm glad you asked.
Because I'm going to.
I'll answer for you. This strategy is what I call doing church. And it's a problem. Doing church is a problem. So let me tell you how I began to undo the doing church deal. In other words, doing meetings, running meetings, having worship, doing announcements, running meetings, having a venue. You need a venue, a student hall or something, or a home or a big home or something. You need something so you can do church. Well, doing church produces these statistics. And most churches around the world, when they plant a church, that's the first thing in their mind, doing church, because that's all they know. It's what they think is required of planting a church. We go into a certain part of town, we hire a venue, come quickly, go for it, join us. We will squeeze up. No, we'll squeeze up for you.
Yeah, we will.
We'll squeeze up for you. We're doing fine. So they hire a venue, they have a team, a startup team with them. They kind of circus of we're here, they do an advertising strategy sometimes if they have money. They let everybody know we are here, our church has arrived, we're about to plant a church, and then they get going with the meeting that they have now strategized and told everybody about. So they run worship, and if they do well, I mean, an early church plant, this is part of its problem, isn't it? An early church plant struggles to do everything well. And so you can always go to the church down the road that's doing it much better. And so an early church plant has an immediate disadvantage in trying to do everything that they do well. Kids ministry, we have more people arriving. How are you? Good to see you.
Are this believers or unbelievers?
Yeah, well, squeeze up. The church is growing. That's a good one. We have space for you. We're in English. Are we okay with English?
Yes.
Yeah. We're okay.
Yes.
Philip, are we okay?
Yes.
But can you start from the beginning?
No.
Yes.
That's a quick answer. So the challenge is that all we read when we read the book of Acts, and we read it through, we think the whole story or narrative about the New Testament is about the church. Make the church the focus. And when we make church the focus of everything, this is what our statistics look like in reaching lost people. 75% are Christians already, they're believers. 20% are former church people, and only 5% that come in are unchurched generally. So we're focusing on meetings and running meetings. Now I'm talking, these are average statistics. You may be bucking the trend, some of you. I accept that. So what's the difference between thinking, well, this is what I did, so I can only tell you what I did, and I would highly recommend it as a strategy. Read the book of Acts again, each of you. If you're interested in creating a new reader, I want you to read it from chapter 1 right through to the end, in one go.
Yeah.
Just one reading. It actually is a lot quicker than you think. It doesn't take you that long. You'll. I mean, it's not a lot to get through. You'll read it in 45 minutes or so. You're done. So read the whole thing. Well, I did that, and I did it 8 times in a row over a period of about Twice a week, I would read the Book of Acts. So I'd read it, I'd read it again, I'd read it again, I'd read it again, I'd read it again. Suddenly, something began to speak to me. It's funny how you... I grew up in church. My dad's a minister, a pastor. I know only church. It's all I know. And suddenly, out of the pages of the Book of Acts, the gospel begins to speak to me. Like I suddenly realized something. That actually, the message, the primary message out of the Gospels and out of the Book of Acts is not the church, but the gospel. Something strange how we made it the church, when in fact it is the gospel. And so when the gospel begins to, the narrative of the gospel begins to speak to me out of the Book of Acts. The gospel is the key to everything in the Book of Acts. And when that begins to dawn on you, so Paul goes to Thessalonica. It's in the narrative. You can read it yourself. I don't have to tell you. You've read it many times. He goes to Thessalonica. He begins to preach in the only place that would have him. His door of peace. His place that would have him. And there's only one reason why the synagogue would have him. It's because of Gamaliel, his teacher. He was a well-known teacher of the law. And because Paul was his student, Paul was like, you know, he'd been taught by Einstein. He'd been taught by somebody that was well known in a Jewish context. So when he arrives, all he needs to do is whisper the word Gamaliel. And they say, okay, what do you want to say? Because this is like a physics conference and Einstein arrived. Of course we want him to talk. Why would I talk? See, so immediately the doors open for Paul to speak. And he goes into the synagogue. But they smell a rat. You know what smelling a rat is? They smell something. There's something else going on. What is he talking about? In other words, he's not following the same pattern of the Jewish teachers. He's preaching the gospel. That's what Paul is doing. This is what it says in the narrative. I'm quoting out of the narrative. It says, many believed. And this is many believed that day. That's the end of that. Second Sabbath comes along. So second weekend. By then he's already been thrown out. This is in Thessalonica. He's been thrown out now. He's no longer in the synagogue because they don't want him there anymore. They realize, this is not the right teaching. Out he goes. Now he's somewhere else in the narrative. And he preaches again the gospel. And it's just more people believe, it says. That's it. Doesn't say much else. Then a third Sabbath, so that's now we're talking 3 weekends. Third Sabbath, he preaches again, and even more people believe. That's it. That's all the Book of Acts has to say. Then things go a little bit wrong, and the pressure is going on, and Paul has to leave. And he leaves Thessalonica. And he goes to Corinth. That's the next step on the journey. So he leaves Thessalonica, goes to Corinth. And in Corinth, church history, now this is not in the scriptures, but if you do a little bit of investigation, it will help you. But church history tells you that from Corinth, he writes 1 Thessalonians. He writes the first letter to the Thessalonian church 1 month later. Well, I've got all sorts of problems with that. I don't know whether Paul preaches the gospel for 3 consecutive weekends. People believe. Where are they meeting? The Book of Acts doesn't seem particularly concerned about where they're meeting. Who's the pastor? Again, the Book of Acts is not particularly concerned about who's leading, who's the pastor of the church. Paul doesn't seem to be particularly concerned about who's the pastor of the church either. In fact, Paul does not even constitute the church. He doesn't put it together. He leaves. 1 month later, though, he writes, just read 1 Thessalonians. Just read it. And realize that this is to a church that started at best 2 months earlier. That's a pretty hefty epistle, 1 Thessalonians. There's a lot of weight in 1 Thessalonians for a church that began 2 months earlier. That interests me. That should interest you. Because I think we have overcomplicated this process a lot because we've made it about doing church when we should have made it about the gospel. That's the difference. So let me jump over. I said I wasn't going to talk for too long. I'm trying not to. I said I have a lot to say. But if we make it about as possible, if the gospel is the center of everything, the preaching of the gospel, if the gospel is the center of what we do in church planting, then what does that mean? It's easy to say. But what does that actually mean? The gospel is the center of everything. Well, this is what the Bible seems to teach. Even Jesus teaches it. And he says, listen, this is what I want you to do when you're on your mission. He says, go into a house, knock on the door. If they open for you, walk in and eat with them. So go in. There's a man of peace. Go in and eat with them. And if they receive you, stay. That's what it says. Jesus talking. He says, if they don't receive you, in other words, they say, no. We're good Germans. We're not interested in the gospel. The Bible says, knock the dust off your feet and hop over to the next street or the next town or the next house. Go somewhere else. The question I have for you is knocking on the door of the first house and they're not receiving you, is that failure? Where's the failure? The failure is not on the part of the knocker or the communicator. The failure is on the part of the receiver. Judgment day, one day, when this man is going to realize he did not open the door to the gospel. Just wait. In other words, the failure is not on the part of the gospel communicator. The failure is on the part of the gospel receiver. Right? Now, In our experience over the last 8.5 years, both in Europe and in Africa, because I know people think it's a lot easier in Africa, people are the same everywhere. The churches are failing all around the world. I'm talking traditional churches. They're failing as much in Africa as they are here. But people are the same. People want to do their own thing, and they don't want to receive the message of the gospel generally. Africa is just a lot more churched. There's a lot more people that already know the gospel than there would be here. That's the only difference. So if you go back to traditional church planting, if you hire a building, play some good worship, preach some good messages in Africa, you're likely to be able to get a crowd. Who do you get into your crowd? 75% of them that you get in are already Christians. You could do that in Africa. You may not be able to do it here as easily. It'll take a little longer because there are not that many of those people around. You're sharing them around in a city amongst other churches. Right? So the pool is smaller. That's the only difference. But people are the same. There's no difference. So going back to my example of gospel preaching, with a call from heaven, anyone can be on an adventure of preaching the gospel anywhere, in any part of a city, in any part of the world, and people will receive the gospel. The gospel does more than just save people. The gospel transforms people and puts them into community. Now, I can give you reams of scripture, which I'm not going to do if we don't have time for it, because we want to talk. But the gospel does more than just save you. The gospel puts you into community with me. It does more than put you into community. It transforms you as well. The power of the gospel transforms you. But the idea that because we are saved, this is what happens with the Thessalonican church. They all believed, and when they all believed, they found each other. And church happened. So here's the idea, simple idea, is that church in the New Testament is the consequence of gospel preaching. It's the result. Church is not the focus. We've made church the focus, and then we try and convince everyone to preach the gospel. flipped around. And so, because we haven't made gospel the central thing, the theme, the start, because this is what happens. Let me tell you a traditional church planning method that many churches all around the world have done. They take 10, 15 people from their church, and they say, we're going over to that suburb, and we're going to go and plant a church over there. Then those 10, 15 people, they kind of relocate or go with them into that suburb. They have a venue, they do some worship, they gather people. And now for the next year or 2 years, this poor pastor has got to convince these 15 people to reach out to a community they don't live in, or maybe have just relocated to. And the challenge and the struggle of that journey is enormous, almost impossible to overcome. In this context, I'm going to give you quite a few examples in a moment, but in this context, what often happens is that you begin these mini church meetings, these mini church house group type church meeting gatherings. We do worship, we share the scriptures together. It's got this feel.
Cozy.
It's cozy. It's family. Now I'm saying every church should provide this. I believe in this, but I don't believe this for evangelism. This is horrible for evangelism. What we're going to do is we're going to kind of move you out of the way, and we're going to leave a seat. Can we ask all of you? We've got an open seat in our group. Can we please fill the open seat with an unbeliever? We're trying to encourage everybody. How many of you know it doesn't really work? Because even if we were to fill the seat with the unbeliever is feeling very uncomfortable, very challenged in this environment. This is not the right environment for him to connect to. And the chance of him getting saved, if he is a complete unchurched person, is very, very low. Salvations don't happen in home groups. And I add, this is part of the failure or struggle of church plants in Europe. Is that often church plants in Europe will sit with between 5 and 15 people. This is kind of the start. You have a group of people, you're trying to start, plant a church. And the problem is many, many, not everyone, but many churches stay here. They don't really go beyond this. Maybe 20, maybe 25, they get there. And the logical, the reason for it is, this is not the perfect environment for reaching people or preaching the gospel.
That's why you asked me why, since when we are 50 people.
That's exactly why I asked the question. Which, in my context, we'd never call this a church. This is a missional community. We're on mission together. This is not a church. In fact, we generally say between 25 and 30 people is what you need to plant a church. Don't plant a church with less. Because you need a core group of people that are already on mission. The beauty of what I'm talking about is that if you plant a church in gospel preaching, they never stop. Never have to convince them. You have to set up, we're going to do an evangelism series, try and get our people to reach out to lost people. Well, you birthed them in the gospel. They're going to stay in the gospel. It doesn't stop. So here's a little bit of our journey. So let me tell you a few stories, which I will stop and we can talk. Several people around our city. So at the moment, 8.5 years in, we've seen 53 churches planted in our city in 8.5 years. Simple. How does that work? Have you got enough church planters? What are you talking about? I don't understand your language. Church planters? Who are church planters? Who are these people? We don't have any. We don't have any leaders or church planters or people that can lead churches. I'm not looking for churches, church planters or church leaders. I'm looking for gospel communicators. Only. Because long before we ever get to a place where we're going to plant a church, we need some people that are willing to take the scripture out into the world and preach the gospel. So let me tell you what that looks like. Just a couple of stories. I'll give you a couple of successful stories. A young lady in our church decides, I'm going to reach out to people. So she is a bit strange. That's all I can tell you. She's an odd girl. She came out of spiritism. You know, she's prophetic. She's quite, I don't like her. She's in my church. I don't like her. And I've told her this, so I can tell you. And so she even drew me a painting of Jesus once. It was frightening. I put it in the garage. It was against the wall. I could not even look at it. A painting of Jesus. She's just. I'm just trying to tell you, this is not the perfect evangelist.
Perfect evangelist.
So, her name is Paula. So Paula decides she's community. Walk up and down the streets and pray for the houses in her community. That's what she's doing. Her husband is unsaved, not a Christian.
Okay.
So she walks for exercise up and down her community, praying for the houses and the streets. And she wants to reach people. So after walking for a couple of weeks, she decides, let me take my mobile number and put it into the postbox of each of the houses. So if anybody in these homes have any problems, they know that I'm at number 12. They can put that request into my postbox and I will pray for them. This is what she decides to do. I'm not saying it's a perfect strategy, but that's what she decides to do. So she walks, she puts her number everywhere. A couple of weeks later, she gets her first request from a family who's struggling with their son with learning disabilities. Not a believing family. And so this family sends a message. She sends a message into the postbox and says, today I stood on the street and prayed for your boy. Puts it into the postbox. And she keeps praying. A week later, she gets her first note back in her postbox to say, we've had a miracle. I don't know what you're doing, but please keep doing it because our boy is just doing so much better. Some of these women decide to begin to walk with Paula. So they walk with her. They are now walking for exercise. They're walking the streets with Paula. They're all unsaved. None of them. Not a saved person amongst them. And they walk in the streets of her community. Eventually, it's 35 women walking with her in the morning.
What is walking for exercise?
Just walking. Just walking. Spaziering. Just walking. Right? Just walking out on the street. Well, Paula is still doing the thing that she feels called to do, which is to stop and to pray. And all these unsaved women are all dutiful. And praying in front of the houses. Her husband is still unsaved. So she realizes as she walks with all these women that they talk very badly about their husbands. They're swearing and all. There's a lot of bad stuff going on. And so she decides, I'm going to run a marriage course for these marriages in my house with her unsaved husband. So she comes and asks him, said, Peter, what do you think? I can honestly tell you that I thought, it's no harm. I don't know any of these people. I don't know any of these people anyway. What harm can she do? I'm thinking that kind of thinking. Not, wow, what an incredible opportunity. I'm not thinking that at all. She doesn't do a three-week course for marriage. She does a 12-week. She comes down, I'm doing a 12-week course. Her husband arrives home early on a Thursday, clears out their lounge. They've got 45 people all crammed into their lounge, husbands and wives from this group. Fast forward 6 months. Her husband, Mike, gets saved. Fast forward another 3 months. Paula becomes the foremost evangelist in our church. Couple by couple, person by person, are just getting saved and walking into the life of our church. This is Paula we're talking about. Fast forward 2 years. Mike and Paula lead a great local church in our community. And they've been leading that church for the last 4.5 years. Well, you say, hey, Mike hasn't been saved for long. He doesn't need to be saved for long. Because all the people around him haven't been saved for long. He just needs to be ahead of them. And they're a, still strange. They're called Frontier Church. They mostly meet outside, and Mike mostly preaches in bare feet. It's a bit of a hippie. Well, they love Jesus, and they love the gospel. And they've got about 50, 60, 70 people walked into the life of our church, are the poorest walking. Another young man, his name is Steph. Now, Steph runs a call center in our community, and he's got about 300 employees in his call center. So he hears this message and says, I need to start a missional gospel preaching adventure. I need to do something. So he decides on a Tuesday at 12 o'clock, they have a 20-minute lunch break. And he decides, I'm going to offer the 20 minutes up. Anybody who wants prayer, we're going to be there, lunchtime on Tuesday. You say, well, where's the gospel in that? Well, I'll show you in a moment. So he begins to pray. There are two women that arrive for the first prayer from his business. They are both Christians. He didn't realize they were Christians, but they're both Christians. So they arrive for the prayer on a Tuesday at the lunchtime. Fast forward 3 months. More than 30 people are praying every Tuesday because God just begins to answer prayers of these people. For people and staff, on his staff. Fast forward 6 months. We are running in the church that I led. We're running like an alpha thing. We're doing... Steph, this young man, says, I want three tables. 30 people at our alpha. He's taken three tables. Fast forward another month, and Steph baptizes on Sunday morning 36 people into the life of our church. 36 people out of his prayer group. Young man, his name is Tim, goes into another part of our city, and he is a surfer, loves to surf. He's out there and decides, these are my people that I'm with. So he decides on the beach to try and connect them a little bit. So he has a little group, a gospel preaching group, an adventure. He doesn't live in the community, but he's got a friend of his that has a flat. So he uses that flat, and some of these, you know, dhaka smoking, weird people all come to this group. There's five or six of them sitting in this group of Tim's. And he drives down, has a surf on the beach, invites people, has a little bit of a barbecue sometimes, and invites them to the flat. And they all sit in the flat, and he preaches the gospel to them. They begin to get saved, one by one, in this group. The five become eight, the eight become 15. They haven't started a church. Tim is desperate to start a church. He's telling me, Pete, we're not ready yet. We've got to keep preaching the gospel. Because the moment we start church is going to become the thing you do, not the gospel. So we've got to keep preaching the gospel. Well, we carried on preaching the gospel in that community for more than a year. Eventually, about 35 people had come to know Jesus Christ out of this group of people. Tim was baptizing them. We were filled with the Holy Spirit. They were connected. When we planted church on Sunday morning, first service, I preached. There were 100 people on Sunday one. So, well, where were the other 65 people from? Those 35 people that got saved in Tim's group, they brought the 65. All unsaved people. But once you start this journey, once you begin, once you press go, now suddenly you begin to attract other Christians. Other Christians come in, they begin to join you. People say, oh, there's a new church in town, let's go see what they do, and they come and join you. But you have to begin how you want to end. The gospel has to be the center. I want you to get it. If there's nothing else I say today, but knock it into you. The gospel is the center of everything, not the church. That's rethinking church, the rethink. Because the traditional church plants that we're doing are not reaching any unsaved people, or very few.
Amen.
It's time to do something else. Go into a house. If they receive you, go have supper with them. I'm in homes and houses and places, and I'm not an evangelist.
So, oh, Pete, you're a bit of an evangelist. Not really. I'm probably a little bit of everything. I'm a bit apostolic, probably. but I hang out in people's homes. I go in, I have tea. I don't drink tea, but I drink lots of tea. Why? Because I just want to, I want to sit with a young man. I sat with a young man just before I came here. His name is Zazi. We're sitting on a bucket. I told you the story. I'm on a bucket, he's on a bucket. And we're having tea with a secondhand tea bag. In a shack. In the backside. Poverty, poverty, poverty. Worst poverty you've seen. You think you've seen poverty? Never seen anything like this. There are four of them sleeping in a single bed. And I'm sitting with Zazi. Him and I are having a conversation about how to start a missional adventure in his part of the city. And I promise you, this young man, 19 years old, not married, will lead a great local church in our city just a year or two from now. Because he's already begun to preach the gospel. People are beginning to gather to the gospel, finding Jesus Christ. And he's just, he says, well, where did they go to church? Zazi meet? Wherever he can meet. The first church we planted, traditional church plant, back to the first one, we planted, cost us more than 100,000 euros to plant. Equipment, sound system, venue, 100,000 euros. Ask me the question, how much it costs us to plant churches now?
How much cost?
Not 1 euro. Not one. Not one. So, well, where does the money come from? When this church now needs money, and you need to take the 25, 30 people up into a building or into a space or something, and you begin, well, these 25, 30 people that have got saved now begin to find, that's what the gospel does. It puts people into community. And they begin to say, you know, where must we put our money? And we begin to hold their money, we gather their money. When they actually launch in and become a church, all the money that they need to launch a church, they have already. Cost nothing. No organization, no process. I planted, he's been in jail. He leads a great local church in our city. I planted churches with four unemployed people. No job. Planted great churches in our city. This particular couple that I spoke about earlier, she's just uneducated, no context. They lead a great local church. A wedding planner, a guy who runs weddings. He led a builder, a house builder, a guy that's building houses. He needs a great local church. 350 people in our city. I can carry on. So how did they get there? They just began a gospel preaching adventure that ended up becoming this, that became this, and that became a local church. If you press into local church and doing church too quickly, you will stall. The gospel preaching adventure ends. That's why many churches in Europe hang here and never go beyond this, or take years to go beyond this. Because they should go back to a gospel preaching adventure again and say, we're not a church. We're preaching the gospel. We're on our gospel preaching adventure season. This is what we do. Final story. A church, a group like this, decides, okay, it's a whole bunch of women and all their husbands are unsaved. So they, okay, what are we going to do? So they decide, let us figure out what each of the husbands are into. What did they like? And so they found that the one husband loved hiking, you know, hiking, walking out in the mountains and hiking. So they shut down the group for 6 months. And they started hiking for him. Wow. No, they hiked. They every weekend they were out on a hiking thing. They hiked. 6 months later, his name is Peter. I know him personally. Got saved. First husband got saved. fast forward a couple of years, all the husbands are saved. They just morph the group into reaching each husband. What does he like? What does he want? Let's stop doing meetings, because meetings don't save anybody. Let's focus on the gospel and preaching the gospel and doing the thing that's going to reach out to this man. And they focus on him for 6 months. He is overwhelmed by the love and the commitment and loves to do what he loves to do, and he commits his life to it. It sounds too simple. Well, ask me.
Thank you.
Enough talking. Any questions? Or comments?
Okay, I have a question.
Yes.
I have lots of questions.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. As I told you before, I am now in this situation of 15, 17 people, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we are now, since about the last year, we get a little bit more. We were 15 before, then we separated because people said, okay, you're trying to do church. We're not going to do it. We want to stay cozy. And we said, okay, this is a vision, we're going to do church, and then some other people came, and we are now about 17 people, okay? So, and we are now, want to hire, to rent a venue. And we're now in this situation, we're still not rented, but we want to, we're going to sign the contract in about 2 weeks. So, what we do is, in my situation, how I get the people to say, okay, people, we're not going to rent this room. We're not going to do in church, as you say. We have to do the gospel now, or preach the gospel to get 25 or 30 people minimum to start a church.
Okay. So let me speak to that.
Yes.
Or minus 100 people. That's 95% of all churches. You should have a question about that. Why? Why are most churches under 100 people all around the world? A very, very simple. Sociologists will tell you the clue. It's got to do with a tribal thinking. A tribal group is defined in sociology as a group between 70 and 100 people. It's what is called a tribal identity. Now, it's not Christian people talking about this. So a tribal identity, what does a tribal identity look like? If you had your 50th birthday party, what people would you invite? About 60, 70, 80 people would come to your big event. It's your family, it's your group, it's your people. Everybody has them. Everybody. And the problem with church is we create a uni-tribal identity within a community, and we find it very difficult to grow beyond it. That's why 95% of all churches are under 100 people. It has a uni-tribal thinking and identity. It can be around preaching, denomination, venue, thinking, worship. How do we grow then? We have to create multiple tribes. I'll give you an example. Let's say that this church of 80 people have no young people in it. At all, no young people, or no children. A family with children arrive, and they say, we like this church, but there are no children here, so this is not a church for us. They don't see themselves. Because they don't see themselves, they quickly leave. A uni-tribal group of people find it very difficult to grow. A church of 1,000+, if a church is 1,000+, it generally has minimum 25 plus tribal groups within it, which means that a bigger church has 25% more chance of growing than this church. Because when people arrive in this church, they see themselves. They see their color. They see their people. They see the young, the old, they see themselves. When they see themselves, they may like this church, but they won't stay. They will lie to your face and say, I'll see you next Sunday, they never come back. I watched it over and over and over again. It happens. So how do you take a church like this, 17, 20 people, and it does not happen within this group? It happens outside of this group. So if you have a tribal group of, say, 20 people that are part of your group, you have to say, well, we've got to create another one. And we have to create another one. So we have to create some missional adventures outside of this group. Either with other people, with foreigners, with another group of people, with different kinds of people. I have been in some pretty unique contexts in my life. One of them was a Zimbabwean church in Dallas, Texas. All Zimbabweans, black Zimbabweans. And I sat with their leadership team after the meeting, and they're all moaning about the fact that they're not reaching any American people. The problem is, black Zimbabwean culture and ways precluded them from reaching any American people. Because they kept trying to invite American people into their meeting, and they would arrive only once and realize this is a black Zimbabwean group, and not feel at home and leave. Maybe 2 weeks at best, would not belong and would go somewhere else. Very, very difficult for that group to grow. Even if they've reached somebody with the gospel, they bring them into the community, they don't stay, they go somewhere else. Multi-tribal strategy, what does that look like? What does that look like? You begin to mobilize your people, like Steph, like Paula, like everybody needs to be on an adventure. Where's your group? Where's your people? Where's your family? I use this little clip every time I do this talk, and you should look it up. It's a Walmart YouTube Coke advert. It's old. It's sitting somewhere in YouTube. But if you look up Walmart Coke Christmas advert, it'll sit there. It's a great little advert because it's a young man walking with a Coke in his hand, and he walks through his family and he sings a song. He says, "Oh, I'm greeting my family. I'm greeting my former girlfriend, my allergist, my friend, my thing, my MySpace friend." And he greets this because he says, "This is my family." He sings a song as he walks with a Coke in his hand. I wish Christians had made that advert. It's so good. Describes brilliantly what your community ought to be about thinking. So start teaching your people to think multi-tribally. Start teaching the 15, 20 people you've got that actually we need to start 2 or 3 or 4 other missional opportunities outside of this group. We cannot have it here. Because if we have it here, this becomes, that's our problem. We have to take it out here and make it gospel here. Then when we want to do church, we can bring it in here. A church somewhere just north of Denver I was working with, they said, "We're desperate." 80, 90 people in the church, they said, "Desperate to grow, we want to grow." Mm-hmm. But there was such a unique, different bunch of people, I thought they'll never grow. That's honestly, it's impossible to make them grow. So I said, let's start one missional adventure. I picked a couple. I literally picked a couple at the table. And says, "You, I want to challenge you, that couple." I said, "I want to challenge you to pick and start a missional adventure in your home. Start inviting the neighbors, not a church meeting, not at all. It's a social gathering. Begin to reach out to your neighbors." I met the pastor nine months later, and they added about 70 people to the church. An entire group of people had come out of this couple and been added to the church. Now suddenly, this was no longer a unitribal church. It was a multi-tribal church. And immediately, their ability to hold on to visitors doubled. Immediately. You want to grow your church? You do? Want to grow your church? Start some missional adventures and start creating multi-tribal for older people. We're going to do a thing for them. And then we're going to do a youth people, young people thing over here, and we're going to begin to see that come in as multiple tribes in our community. Evangelism comes in the form of missional communities that are started beyond the church. That's the way to grow the 20. Got to think about mobilizing 2 or 3 or 4 people in your group to start other missional adventures. So how will I make them do that? You start the first one. Not the group. Leave the group be. Don't touch them. Leave them alone and go start another one. Not for Christians, for friends, for connections. I close my street off. And remember, I told you, I'm not an evangelist. Not. I closed my street off. This side, they asked the police if I could. I closed it off here and here. And I ran 3 barbecue units on my street, on the street. And invited the whole street to come. Bring your own meat and everything. And they bought their beer and their meat. Lots of beer.
Lots of meat.
And before they got into all the beer, I just said, hey, just thought it'd be great to get to know each other. I'm pretty new to this street. Drunk. Really. I'm just saying, that's what happened.
Yeah.
But my neighbor committed his life to Jesus Christ. My neighbor, kind of across from us, committed his life into the life of our church. How? This street. That's all I can tell you. And I told them, I'm a Christian. I'm a pastor in this community. I just want to say hi to everybody. Now, drink and be merry. I'm not trying to stop them from drinking. That would be silly. Right? And suddenly you have bridges with people that, when their lives begin to fall apart. You had a question?
I have a question, yeah. So before it's a church, you mentioned that it's starting from 25 people. Then you're thinking about church. So, but it's, well, how's the life of the group before it's a church? I mean, what? How often do they meet? Or is it just that they have projects going out on the streets, preaching the gospel? Or
is there
a discipleship course?
Not really, no.
No,
not at all.
Okay.
We have no course, no thing. No, we're not even trying to do a course. We're just trying to preach the gospel. Only, there's only one agenda. One agenda, get people saved. Only one. Congregate into community. The church has to take responsibility. Now suddenly, we have a discipleship agenda and many other agendas. But initially, when we just start our journey, we just have a gospel agenda. Nothing else. Now, if you say, well, how long can that carry on without you taking responsibility? Of course you take some responsibility along the way. People are getting baptized, filled with the Holy Spirit, their lives are transforming, but they're still not in a church. They're still in this group. So it's a journey, right? It takes time.
Well, it's just one by one through the relationship.
Pretty much.
I mean, the new believer needs to learn a lot of it.
I don't believe we need to learn a whole bunch. I think we need to learn through being with one another. In this early, in the early parts of our Christianity, walking with people is much more important than teaching them. So walk with them. They learn by you, by your life, by your example. And I must add, though, is that when I talk about evangelism or outreach or mission, I'm not talking about going on the street at all. Not even in the slightest. If you are a street evangelist person standing on the corner shouting, you know, God bless you. You do your thing. It's not my thing. I don't like it. And they're probably right. It's just what I think. So if it's your thing, I'm sorry. I don't mean to down your thing, but that's fine. You must do your thing. It's not my thing. And I feel like for me to be able to reach into someone's life, I need to have a bridge with them. What is that bridge? They've got to like me. When they like me, I have a bridge. When I get into their lives and they like me and I like them, I have a bridge with them. Now the gospel can walk here. But if they don't like me, they don't know me, how are we going to have a bridge? So evangelism, in my mind, is to reach the sphere that each one of you have already. I think it's around you. You already have one. Teach your people that they have a sphere, each one. And tell them the church is not going to reach it. They are. It's their job.
Yes. I have a question. What's your experience about gospel, giving gospel? Are there some good ways of presenting, or what the people are experiencing?
Many different ways. As many ways as there are people. Some that I can throw at you. One couple decided to plant a church with a running group.
They started a running club. They began with three or four people. They used to meet mostly on a Saturday morning. They would pray in a park, and out of that, people got saved, and they started a church. That was just their idea. So they said, we love running. So let's just get people running with us. And what they would do pretty much every time before they started the running group, they would pray. And my mate, I know him well, he says, Pete, I managed to squeeze the gospel into that prayer every Sunday. And then it would start all sorts of conversations. I mean, I don't understand how people can have conversations running, because I'm out of breath in 2 seconds. But they have conversations running out there on the street. And they would talk. And slowly but surely people would get saved, come into community. What if you couldn't fail? Somebody says to me, well, we had a real go. I was going to go and plant a church here. We had a real go. It didn't work. I said, so why didn't you go one street over and have another go? Or one house over, or one town over, or somewhere else. Because failure is not really part of this agenda at all. Full-time ministry is not the goal of church. Surely it's not. If one day you become a full-time minister of the gospel, so be it. But that's not the goal. Surely. Surely the goal is to reach more lost people. That's the goal. It's a much more worthy goal than having a job. But if you're just looking for a job, go get a job. It's better than looking for... I know I'm a bit straight talking. I don't know whether that... As the fingerprints is ways to reach people. I just say, people, stop thinking, dreaming, talking. Who knows? What will God use you for? What opportunity is there behind your life? And some people say, I have no opportunity. None at all. I said, well, then I want to suggest to you that you do what the Bible says. Find someone, a friend, a connection, a person, a man of peace, and use him to reach all his people. If you don't have any ability, use him. And through his door, reach everyone behind him.
So we have a lot of... maybe Paula's in church. do you help them? I also love those guys. Do you help them basically going? Because I see them reaching out a lot. What you're starting is this 50 group, or does it just happen on its own? Is there any guidance process in that?
So, I have left a lot out.
Yeah.
In this talk. I just want to stir you to read the Book of Acts again and again and again. That's, if I get that goal achieved, I've achieved the goal. But the apostolic is important. What I mean by the apostolic, in other words, if this man here says, I've got three young people in my group who I think should begin to look at starting these missional adventures, let me just say, their success depends largely on whether or not he believes in them and how he walks with them and how many cups of coffee he has with them and how much his hand is in their back. Because if there is no hand, and if there is no belief, nothing happens. So how you walk with people, how you believe in people, and how you have conversations and say, Sazi, sitting on a bucket in a shack, Sazi, it's a call of God on your life. People keep saying to me, stop telling people they got a call of God on them. You kind of get dreams. I said, if you don't want me to say that, you've got the wrong pastor. Hire someone else. It's what I do, and that belief. I think you can do it. I think the call of God is on you. Let's do something together. Let's make something. Suddenly, belief produces something. Sorry, I've made lots of shortcuts. The only thing I was hoping to do in this session, answer a couple of questions, and stir your hearts and minds to think gospel, not church.
I love the local church. You may think you've got some problem with the church. Not at all. I love the church. But when it comes to growth and movement, the gospel is the central theme of the New Testament, not the church. The church is the consequence. It's what happens. It's the outcome. Make the gospel the center again. Amen.
Amen. Thank you.